This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, a very good morning to you. You're listening to The Morning Run. It's 6 in the morning on Wednesday, the 13th of April. I'm Philip C. And in the studio with me is Madam Wong Xiaoning and Mistress Tan Chun Li.
What mistress?
I don't know whether my arm is long enough to give you a smack because... As you all know, that's one of the worst things to call me, madam.
I know.
It's a reality check of my age, but I really, really hate it.
I know. Well, I'm just so happy to have both of you in the studio. It is wonderful, isn't it? It's a Wednesday. It's a hum day. And presumably, this was quoted when ancient philosophers saw dromedaries and didn't see Bactrian camels then, isn't it? Because, you know, Bactrian camels have two humps, and I wouldn't consider Friday a double hump day.
Okay, thanks for those words of wisdom, Philip.
But you know, I think, ladies, besides the camel jokes and all that, we do have a very packed show, don't we?
We do.
We do, right? Because at 7:15, we'll be speaking to Tricia Yeo from IDEAS over the recent incidents in the United Arab Emirates with two diplomats. And really, what does that say about their independence and the underlying bureaucracy and machinations behind them?
Interesting stuff. I think this is something that we should really be watching very closely.
I think so. I think this whole debate and tension between, you know, government and bureaucracy and bureaucrats is always been going on for such a long time.
Especially since actually in the 12th Malaysia Plan, there is reference to the civil service and the necessity to raise the level of civil service. And we know during the COVID-19 pandemic, despite the government changes, we managed to actually continue as a nation, in part, a lot to do with the civil service.
Yes. And, you know, we've had so many conversations about its importance. But beyond civil service, we're also going to be going down under, isn't it, to Australia, Chun-Li?
Yes. And at 7:30, Australia will actually be going to the polls on 21st of May. And can Prime Minister Scott Morrison win a second term? And so at 7:30, we will discuss his prospects with Dr. Jill Shepherd of the Australian National University.
And we're coming back home closer to highways at 7:45, shall we?
Yeah, it's the highway or the byway, because we're going to speak to business commentator Pankaj C. Kumar on the proposal by Amanat Liberal Raya Rakyat, or ALR, as everyone knows about it. Is this the best deal for everyone? Not just the concession holders, but including the rakyat.
I know, you know, I think Pankaj did write a column, isn't it, about the win-win-win scenario. So we'll be asking him whether that really is a triple win scenario. Now, we have so much to cover for the next 3 hours, so stay tuned and join us, because we'll be discussing all of that and more after this on the show. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. That was Mercy, Mercy Me by Marvin Gaye. And don't we all just need a little bit of mercy in our life? This is The Morning Run. I'm Philip C. And I'm here today with Wong Xiaoning and Tan Chun Li. Now, ladies, as Plato, the philosopher, mentioned that opinion is the medium between knowledge and ignorance. But I think we think our opinions are biased towards knowledge and wisdom, are we not?
Wow, so atas, right? Plato at what, 6:09 in the morning. Well done, Philip C.
Well, I didn't forget that, because that's the topic of the first story for today, isn't it, Chun Li? You picked this, why we are all forgetting things right now.
Yes, and so it seems that we have short-term memory more and more often these days. And what was your name again, you were saying?
My name is Wong Xiaoning.
Yes. So this happens, right? Sometimes, you know, when you're so used to looking at or meeting your colleagues on Zoom, and then suddenly you see them in person, you're like, your name.
Well, I find it interesting, because I think it's easier now to remember names, because when I see and introduce to someone on Zoom, the written name is there with the face.
Oh, that's
so
true.
I can associate much easier.
Wait. We have seen a lot of Zoom accounts under different people's names, right? A lot.
Oh, yes.
Like, I've seen with children's names. Some people borrow other people's Zoom's names, like in our office here.
Don't give me the side eye.
Yeah, I'll give you the side eye. So I think you better not just assume that name at the corner is really the person's name, Philip.
All right, I'll just admit it, right? It's referring to me, because I teach Sunday school on Sunday. And so I steal, or should I say, use one of our producer's accounts, Mo.
Yes.
And so, like, the children call me Mo, but actually, you know, that's a problem.
Exactly, right?
So, yes, we're actually looking at this article on Wall Street Journal titled Why We Are All Forgetting Things Right Now. One of the researchers that's quoted in the article says that our brains nowadays are like computers with many tabs open right now.
Yes.
And because of that, this slows down our processing power, and memory is an area that is faltering, which I totally agree. I think if you look at the during the lockdown period, there's also this period of time where you're losing track of time as well. Mm. You know, so in terms of our memory, there's, I think we are really in this phase that we are getting weaker. We have so many things that's taking our attention span. At the same time, pandemic is also weighing in and all the stress. And that is why that's causing all this memory, so-called failure in a way.
Yes.
And the article actually talks about how to be better at it or how to boost memory. Well, which is the typical thing as in like, don't force your memory.
Yep.
Stop multitasking so that you don't have too many tabs open.
Yes. And can I just build on that stop multitasking point? Because I think the analogy you gave about, you know, having your laptop open with multiple tabs resonates very much with me. I was just doing a count just now on my tabs. I have 10 tabs open at the moment. And I think that's the problem, isn't it? We tend to try and multitask so much. And as a result, we juggle so many balls and for sure things will fall in the whole process.
And it could be also that you have the TV on and then you have your laptop with you and your iPad with you, maybe with your phone and chatting with your friends. So many things happening. Which one do you, that you're actually getting all the attention? And that's why, which one that your memory can actually, which one that actually will stay in your memory? And that's where the problem is, right?
Yeah. And Shaoning, do you have that affliction as well?
For sure. My problem is Bloomberg. Not so much all these tabs on my computer, but I'm always looking at Bloomberg. Then I look back at my PC. And I think the reality is that, yes, we should acknowledge that the last two and a half years, as we enter into the third year of the pandemic, we were a very lucky generation. We never really had to deal with extreme periods of stress where death was a reality. And I think COVID-19 brought that home to us. We didn't have a World War II. We didn't have a World War III, right? We didn't live under those tough conditions like a Japanese occupation. So we were blessed. And then COVID-19, which honestly, in the scheme of things, wasn't so horrendous because we still could function. We still had food to eat.
Mm.
But I wasn't used to it. I wasn't used to being stuck at home. I wasn't used to being so fearful of doing simple things like going to the supermarket. Or, you know, even just filling petrol. Everything just felt like incredible sense of dread because there was so much unknown, so much uncertainty. That put my brain under stress.
I see. So the disorientation, you know, this big shift happening here really caused a lot of stress, I think, and made you rethink a lot. And I think also then impacted your memory.
Yes. I think, and then as a result also, due to the stress, you got into this whirlpool of like trying to always manage so many things in your brain at the same time, juggling this, juggling that, right? Because you were worried about your family, you had to continue working. And it was just not natural to manage it, so many things at one time. And I think that, of course, your brain is finite. Like, as much as it is a muscle, but maybe the storage is finite in the sense that you can't expect it to suddenly grow overnight.
Well, for sure, it's a complicated organ.
Yeah, but do you have problem with losing track of time sometimes, or having memory loss on which day is it? It's like during the lockdown especially.
Because I worked every day. I worked throughout COVID-19. I was very conscious of time.
Well, I know. I think this is going to be a conversation that will, you know, be very, that can actually go much deeper. But let's never forget all the things that we are always grateful for. We're heading into a quick break. When we come back, we'll be discussing the catfish effect. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. That was With or Without You by the U2. I wonder what we can live without. I can't live without my bolster or lam chim.
Chocolate
for sure. Kit Kat, Ecuadorian Ivory Coast brand for sure. Thank you very much, Chun Li.
It's love and affection.
For sure. In any case, it's 6:20 in the morning. You're tuned in into The Morning Run. I'm Philip C and I'm in the wonderful company of Wong Shaoning and Tan Chun Li. Now, you know, as we go into the next segment, I would like to talk about the catfish effect. I picked this story. It came from The Economist, my second favorite column after Bartleby. Schumpeter.
The one at the last page.
Not the obituary.
Which is my favorite.
Your favorite is obituaries. But I love this story about the catfish effect. It really talks about the story about why China pushed and encouraged Tesla to set up their production facility in China. Because the catfish effect idea is really about the predator making weaker rivals swim faster. So what you technically try to do is to bring the stronger employer or company into the ecosystem so that all the other laggards try to keep up the pace.
Okay, so what you're trying to do is create a new benchmark.
Yes,
is that
absolutely.
And then everyone looks at this new benchmark and think, okay, I need to get to this level and move towards that benchmark. Is that the whole
idea? That is the intention, right?
Okay.
Because you basically are a pace setter.
Interesting. And I think If you want to be global, that's the thing, right? You want to be global, you want to create world-class companies that can compete, then you do need to do this. Because otherwise, everything is relative, isn't it? If you just look at your performance in an absolute basis, how do you know how well you are doing?
I think so. And what do you think, Shen-Li? Because there's so many applications to this, isn't it? Not only to, you know, corporate environment or the business place as well.
Actually, I was thinking about it in the corporate environment. Does this catfish effect work all the time? Because back in my where I was, I think we do have a few of the catfishes around and all that. But I was thinking about it, whether there's the effect that the company really wants to achieve. Is there?
Okay.
I
get what you're saying. Yeah. You're talking about, let's say, a work environment where maybe a boss brings in a high performer and then it tries to basically energize the rest of the organization to keep up to pace.
But
that
it
doesn't
may not
necessarily
work.
Manifest.
Why didn't it work? Because people left? Then, hey, wasn't that objective achieved?
No. I think people were just too comfortable in what they were doing and how they were doing things. So sometimes it may or may not work.
So what, as in it disrupts things?
It didn't disrupt anything. So basically, no effects. Zero sound.
I see. So basically people just ignored it and just moved on with their lives. They didn't really compare themselves
because
and try to move up and
exactly,
improve themselves.
Because it could be a bigger problem when it comes to an organization setup. Mm. Right? It could be a cultural issue, right? It could be way more than that. Maybe there's some motivation problem or things like that, but then it's not something that is easily solved with just a catfish.
Maybe you need more than one catfish.
I think you need probably more than one. I've seen it work and not work in many different working environments. I mean, I've also been catfished as well, right? I've been viewed a catfish and also I've been inspired by a catfish in both scenarios. But I want to just bring back to this story about why China wanted to bring Tesla in to create this EV hub. And I want to bring us closer to Malaysia, where do we see the reverse here, where we try to create these local champions and jago kampongs, which in my view is a reverse of this whole effect, isn't it?
Yeah, on some level it is. And then begs the question in terms of where we rank, right? In terms of attracting FDI or actually moving up the value chain. You know, we talk about Malaysia's structural issues, one of which, of course, is low-paying jobs. Mm. And how do we then move away from low-paying jobs? Definitely, we need to move up the productivity chain. We need to go up to higher value job creation, but we don't, right? Or we struggle with it. And is it because at the end of the day, our industries are still quite backward. We're not forward-looking enough.
Yeah.
So how do we create the environment whereby, you know, companies aspire to do better, do more?
So even if we have a catfish in our economy, in whatever sector or industry, is our structural issue still pulling us backwards?
What we need is to have the right policies in place to attract the catfish in the first place.
Exactly. Because what happens is if you don't attract the catfish goes somewhere else. It goes to another pond. Perhaps.
And we know lots of people want this catfish.
Yes, that pond could be in Indonesia or Vietnam. And that's the problem, isn't it? And then in the end, we live in our own pond where everyone becomes weak in this whole globalization supply chain.
Yeah, or maybe under some form of delusion that it's okay, we're doing all right.
Yes. And then you end up focusing and thinking about your local domestic market, which then basically limits your growth opportunity. I think that's the biggest issue here. But, you know, getting a catfish into a pond is also very painful in the short term, right?
Yes.
Because you're getting people to exercise and basically pull
their
muscle.
And sometimes it's never nice to know how low you rank, but that reality check is not a bad thing.
And I wonder how it feels to be the catfish sometimes, because if you're in a pond with really low quality, you know, does it drag the catfish down?
Let's just say sometimes the catfish wants to scream, but they're just swimming ahead.
I see. And let's hope there are always these right catfishes in our lives that drive us for better performance. We're heading into the 6:30 a.m. news bulletin. And when we come back, we'll be looking at the latest international headlines coming up everywhere by Fleetwood Mac. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. That was Bruises by Chairlift. It's 6:39 in the morning, Wednesday, the 13th of April. You're listening to The Morning Run with Tan Chen Li, Wong Xiaoning, and myself, Philip C. And now this is a time when we have a look at the stories that made international headlines this morning. Chen Li, what do you have?
I have Sri Lanka as another headline today for me because they have concerns that they may not be able to pay their upcoming July bond, and they want to save the money or the US dollar so that they can buy food and fuel. I mean, this is really very dire, isn't it?
It is a very dire situation in Sri Lanka, because I also was looking at the Star and also picking up in the foreign news, Sri Lanka's top diplomat in Beijing also said he's very confident that China will come through on a US $2.5 billion financial support. As you said, right, I think for me, the question now is who does Sri Lanka turn to for financial assistance in this time?
Exactly.
Well, and they've turned to India, who has bailed them out by giving them fuel because they had very short-term needs. So India stepped in. And I think the next step is going to the IMF. But the IMF will request certain conditions.
For sure. I mean, I think IMF has always been very contentious, right? Because they will impose all these restrictions. So
institutional reform.
Yes, but I think the challenge is that's why these bilateral deals usually do take place, isn't it?
Yes, and not forgetting that their inflation is running at 20% now, and every day they will have electricity cuts up to 13 hours. It's really not
it's
a very good state.
Matter.
Yes. Yeah, and we've had this conversation actually with Dr. Chulani. We had a podcast, so you can listen to that on our BFM app or, of course, also on our website. It's entitled Economic Pressures Spark Mass Discontent in Sri Lanka. So do listen to that. It's very interesting. It's a deeper dive on the current issues faced by the Sri Lankans.
Yeah, I think very interesting, right? You're seeing so many issues happening across South Asia now, right? Not only in Sri Lanka, but also in Pakistan, right? We also have an interim prime minister there as well. Shawnee, do you have anything that caught your eye in terms of international news?
Well, Putin says, according to the Financial Times, and this is a bit scary, Putin says peace talks with Ukraine at dead end.
Yes, I heard that and saw that, you know, because and I saw overnight that actually the Austrian chancellor actually even went to Russia.
And it was not a good outcome.
It was not a good outcome. It was very contentious and high tension. And I think basically peace talks seem to have ebbed away.
Yeah. So what does this mean? It looks like the war is going to grind on slowly, bit by bit. And even Russia has changed their war strategy. They've taken some troops out of Kiev. And it just looks like we're going to have this go on and on for at least a few months with no solution in sight.
And I was looking at this article also about if, you know, the war has ended, how much does it take to rebuild Ukraine? And it's estimated to be around 200 to 500 billion US dollars.
The bill is huge.
It's huge.
The bill is huge. And I think especially as you were saying, Shawnee, that this is going to be a very long and protracted war. Then the question here is diplomacy. And, you know, marrying both stories of South Asia and the Russia-Ukraine conflict, I saw this 2+2 talks take place in Washington, right, between India and US. And they basically agreed to disagree on the Ukraine war simply because India didn't want to make any commitments. And I think we're still having a very different stance versus the United States with respect to Ukraine. And I find this a very interesting, political ball to juggle, because you see China tensions also, Russia, Ukraine, India and China are not the best of friends.
No, but they all kind of on the same boat on this one, right?
I think so. I find that that very interesting, right? Because India also wants the energy from Russia. They're even willing to bypass the sanctions and the arms. 70% of Indian arms are from Russia. So that's for me is where I think that the political question here is, right, with Asia.
What is our role in this?
Yeah, but I also wonder whether India can still afford to buy all this oil from Russia, because when we were talking to a Bloomberg analyst on oil a few days ago, he was talking about how the transportation cost is skyrocketed 300% if you were to buy oil from Russia. So I'm not sure if India will be able to support or continue to order this expensive oil.
But they're getting it at a huge discount, isn't
that's
it?
True, because Russia. Nobody wants it. Nobody is allowed to own it.
The discount is about $20 to $30 per barrel cheaper.
Which is a lot. Because currently, Brent crude is $100, right? So you're getting it at $70. If I was an oil trader, sneaky oil trader,
well, they are the sneaky oil trader.
They are sneaky oil trader. So I think this is where Asia really needs to decide. And I think Singapore is one of the clear outliers where they differentiate themselves and really pivoted with the United States here.
Yeah. Very quickly, there was also news of a shooting happening in the Brooklyn Underground, right? In the subway station, excuse me. So apparently 10 people were shot. This happened at peak travel time, 8:30 in the morning. Fortunately, no deaths. But I always wonder in US, how many guns are out there? How many?
Yeah, this is a never-ending story, isn't it, about gun reform in the United States. And it is that tension over freedom and liberties to bear arms and to protect yourselves versus being able to provide the necessary protection for civil society. I think this is an ongoing story, and we've seen successive US administrations try to pivot it. It's never really materialized to anything.
Yeah, I mean, in Malaysia, we have our security challenges, right? It's not like there's no crime. But most of the time, guns, we don't really hear of it.
Yes. It's 6:45 in the morning. When we come back, we'll be looking at today's local headlines. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. That was Wild Blue by John Mayer. But don't worry, folks. There's nothing wild here. This is an oasis of calm as
no,
we age.
No, no, please. Oh, that's just goodness. You.
Oh God, Xiaoning, this is really an oasis of calm. We are We are hitting and aging nicely 7 in the morning because currently it's 6:51. You're listening to The Morning Run and right now.
We're here to shake up things, Philip.
Anyway, let's focus now on latest news locally in Malaysia. Xiaoning, Chun-Li, what's on your eye?
I want to talk about the Indonesian maids and the minimum wage that we will be allowed, or so-called we will be paying to them. So it's 1,200 ringgit instead of 1,500 ringgit. And employers have the, it's up to you whether you want to pay them more. So, and apparently the reason why is because at the time when our minister, our human resource minister, Dato Sri M. Saravanan, he said that at the time when they were discussing this with the Indonesian government, it was still 1,200 ringgit, and that's why they're going to stick to it. And it depends on which side you are. I always think that Indonesian maids, they do a lot more than 1,200 ringgit. I mean, I'm sure a lot of employers will probably be like, no, that's not true. But then I actually think that
it's
they deserve
back-breaking
more.
Breaking work, okay?
It is
try cleaning the house all day from, let's say, 8 to 8. It's no joke, okay?
But, you know, I share the sentiment, you know, Chun-Li, you have, you know, for many of us here who... You know, I think it's very divisive discussion here because I know many people who actually are reluctant to pay more.
Correct.
And
yes.
You know, we even if you rationalize and tell them it's a very difficult work and all that, they still think that it's menial and it doesn't justify even moving to 1,005. And this is a societal issue, in my view. It's nothing to do. Policy hopefully will shape it, but we need to also change within society.
Yeah,
this
mindsets
perception
definitely need to change. Okay, I'm looking at the Malaysian Reserve, and the headline here is PM envisions AHTV, which is our automotive high-tech valley to be ASEAN's EV hub, electric vehicle hub. Now, we know we have an EV policy, and it's been compared to Thailand, a few countries in this region, and it's been also said to be a bit lacking. So I want to know what other policies are going to be in place to make us this EV hub.
I found it very interesting because we just had a conversation about the catfish effect, where Tesla was welcomed into China really to help rebuild the ecosystem. So to a certain extent, policy, yes, very important. To a certain extent, yes, infrastructure. And I hope, you know, Tanjung Malim becomes the next Detroit of the world. Mm. But the question is, are you going to also attract the right foreign investment here to also manufacture so you can build capabilities?
Yeah, because if we look at our neighbours, right? So Thailand is definitely the pickup truck capital of ASEAN. Yeah. Everybody goes there to build the pickup trucks. And then in Indonesia, it's very much the MPV center, right? So your big vans, right? They have really attracted a huge amount of FDIs. A lot of manufacturing hubs are already there. So are we a little bit late in the game? And is this our opportunity then, the electric vehicles?
But here's my challenge, right? Think about it. We have Porsche in Kulim. Mm. We've got Volvo in Shah Alam.
Yes.
We've got Mercedes in Pekan Pahang. So we really are basically just spreading our seeds everywhere. There's no focus or no centralization. Is there value in creating a hub, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think there's a concerted effort here, because everybody wants to have their own auto hub because it creates jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for sure. But if you're later on in the morning at 9:15, we'll be looking at the auto industry, but from a slightly different angle.
Yeah.
And that's from how can you make money from the auto stocks? So do tune in at 9:15. We'll be speaking to Daniel Wong. He's the analyst at the Hong Leong Investment Bank.
I just want to just shift attention to another story that caught my eye on the edge, right? Page 17, by Reuters, actually, as Malaysia tests AI court sentencing, some lawyers fear for justice. Now, this is really on the back of stories that Sabah and Sarawak are testing the AI tool for sentencing recommendations as part of a nationwide pilot.
Okay, and you can listen to a deeper conversation that our Evening Edition colleagues had yesterday evening, entitled AI Playing a Part in Court Sentencing. You can, of course, find that on our BFM app, also on our website. So do tune in.
Yeah, I find this application of technology, especially for our justice system, I wonder whether we are ready for that, whether there is enough maturity to understand this. And also, there are a lot of concerns that it does create bias, right, against minorities and marginalized communities as well. So really, there is a broader question of whether this is the right time to even do this. Although, granted, it is a pilot stage at the moment.
And I just want to remind everybody, because I think we haven't thought about it in a very long time, but do you realize that the daily cases of COVID-19 are below 10,000? As of yesterday, 7,739 new cases only.
Excellent news.
So good news, but we still, of course, need to plug away.
Plug away. And also, I think we are seeing new variants also coming through. Omicron XE was re-emerging in Japan as well. Chen Li, last story.
Yes, I want to move back to foreign labour again. And this one is actually MTUC. They are questioning whether, or they raise concern because we are allowing 500,000 workers from Bangladesh. And are we exploiting them? And are we contributing further into the forced labour issue that we've been having, or some of our manufacturers is having?
Well, I think that's a very pertinent point. I mean, we talk about the gap between labour requirements, because if you go everywhere, there's a huge shortage of labour. But it's also the question of whether Malaysians would rather do these jobs, right? Because, you know, there is a question that they would rather do food delivery rather than these 3D jobs. And I think if Malaysians don't want to take up these jobs, I think many companies and employers have no choice but to basically rely on foreign labour. Now, we've all run out of time as we head to the 7 a.m. news bulletin. When we come back, we'll be looking at how markets closed yesterday. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.